The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome to Sports Talk on this Thursday afternoon with Jimmy Himes. I'm John Wilkerson. We have a lot coming your way today. We look forward to being joined by Brent Hubbs of AllQuest.com for his weekly visit. That'll be hour number three of the program. Speaking of weekly visits, Mike Murray, president and GM of the Ice Bears, joins us for Slap Shots at 4:35. We'll have post-game reaction from Rick Barnes after last night's Tennessee trip to Arkansas. Didn't go well for the Volunteers, even though they did have a very solid second-half rally. In the end, Razorbacks ran away from the Volunteers over the final 10 minutes. And Jimmy Himes, you were able to catch up with somebody famous, not only just in East Tennessee, but in the state of Tennessee, a TSSAA Hall of Famer who has just been named a major award winner.
Jill Pruden, she was a head coach at Oak Ridge, the girls for 31 years. She won three state titles. She had five runner-up finishes. She has been selected for the Morgan Wooten Award for girls basketball coach. Morgan Wooten, of course, the famous coach at DeMatha. He was there for 46 years, recently passed away. But this comes from the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, and they are presenting this award. She'll receive it at the McDonald's High School All-Star Game, which is around April 1. But we did have a chance to track her down, catch up with her, talk to her about her years at Oak Ridge, and so very deserving. 908 wins, 161 losses in her 31 years as a head coach. So we will bring that interview for you later today.
So we have that and more today on Sports Talk. And Jimmy, last night, Tennessee fell behind early, scored the first point, only to see Arkansas score the next 14. Trailed by 13 at the half, so it was 50-50 the rest of the first 20 minutes. And then Tennessee put together a wild charge coming out of the locker room, but just couldn't sustain it.
No, they couldn't. And it was Tennessee was down, was it 14-1?
Yes.
Something like that. And then it was 24-9, and then they cut it to 7 to Tennessee, and then it got back to about 13 at halftime. Tennessee whittles it down to 45-43, and you're thinking, okay, they got this charge going. Well, then Arkansas charged right back, and Tennessee was unable to stop Mason Jones. Jones had 37 points, and Isaiah Joe had 22. That's 59 combined points. Do you know how many they had in the first game against Tennessee when the Tennessee Vols won by 21? They combined for 9. Jones had 9, and Joe didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, though, with Joe in that lineup and with the way they played last night, that was a good-looking basketball team. Now, that – they played like an NCAA tournament team last night. Whether they make it or not, who knows, but they lost 5 in a row without Joe. The announcers kept saying, the committee's going to take that into consideration. If Arkansas wins each of its remaining regular season games and makes a run in the SEC tournament, they can get in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they'd be 9-9 in SEC play in regular season, which that's something that at least keeps you in the conversation. And then if you put together, as you mentioned, a run in Nashville, that can be something that could be very pleasing come Selection Sunday.
So, once again, turnovers a problem for Tennessee, but they didn't come in the bunches like they did against Auburn, and actually they were pretty good in the second half. This stat surprised me. Arkansas scored 24 points off 12 turnovers. Auburn scored 27 off 24 turnovers. You usually don't give up 24 points off 12 turnovers. Mm-hmm. But each of those mistakes cost Tennessee, and I don't have the breakdown on this, but I think several of those might have led to three-pointers by Arkansas. So Tennessee falls again. We said yesterday we thought that probably four people had to play well for Tennessee. Bowden had a nice game with 19. Fulkerson had 15 points, 5 rebounds. Pons had 12 points, 9 rebounds. He's also blocked a shot now in all 28 games this year. I'm not so sure Santiago Viscovi had his worst game for Tennessee. 6 points, 5 turnovers, 0 assists.
Yeah, they did a nice job of hassling him and making him uncomfortable. Did not hit a 3, which he had done in every game prior to last night.
Correct.
And so they really made it difficult. And Coach Barnes, I think, said afterward that is they didn't let him go to his right.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely, it was Witt that was guarding him, and it was clear they weren't going to let him go dribble to the left side, which is his strength. Josiah James didn't have a good game either. So the combination of that led to Tennessee losing. So now Tennessee needs to regroup. They got Florida coming in. Florida's a pretty hot team. Now Florida beat LSU 81-66. Florida now has their record has jumped into where they're, I think, tied for third in the SEC in the standings. Behind, let's see, Auburn's at, Kentucky and Auburn are ahead of them. Mm-hmm. But at 10-5, they're tied with LSU, and they had a really solid game last night. That's a dangerous team. That last night wasn't the surprise. The surprise that Florida hadn't had a better year. They've got too much talent. They got some really good players. And last night, one of the better players, Keontae Johnson had 25 points. Scotty Lewis had 18. He's the freshman. And the point guard, Andrew Nebhard, had 17. Those three guys play like that, and they didn't get that much out of Blackshear. And when those three play like that, they're hard to beat. Also, Florida shot 55% from the field. LSU's 44. Here's another telling stat. Florida, 17 assists, 5 turnovers. LSU, 9 assists, 8 turnovers. So, nice win for Florida. We'll see if Tennessee, though, can bounce back and get a win at home. Tennessee have been so good for so long at home. They've lost 5 games at home this year, but the Florida tip is going to be at 2 o'clock Saturday. John, I think that's a big game to try to at least right the ship a little bit for the Tennessee Vols.
Yeah, you've got 2 games left at home, and it's interesting that you look at the top 3 or teams that are third or better in the Southeastern Conference, and Tennessee plays them all down the stretch with the exception of LSU. You've got Florida here, you go to Kentucky, and you got Auburn here.
That's we looked at that before the year and knew that was going to be a really hard stretch for Tennessee, and it was conceivable they could go 0-5. I didn't think they would, but it was conceivable. But right now, they got to come up with a big game if they want to stop that. So we'll see what happens. But with the Florida, again, Florida coming in pretty hot with the Gators having a one-sided win against LSU. We'll go and get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters, technology you need, people you can trust. So we've talked about the Vols, about Jill Pruden. How about Tennessee baseball? They run the record of 9-0, beat UNC Asheville, which is 2-6 now, 12-1. Tennessee hit 3 home runs. They've had at least 2 home runs in all 6 home games, at least 2 home runs in 7 out of 9 games, as they hit 3 yesterday, and a really strong relief performance by a freshman, Matt McLaughlin. 5 innings pitched, no runs, 1 hit, 5 Ks. John, that's a strong outing by McLaughlin.
Very much so. And that's one of the things that Tony Vitello has spoken to, is just the guys that are waiting for that opportunity to get out there and shine. Jackson Lee started, pitched 1 inning, and then McLaughlin came in and did a very nice job of keeping UNCA at bay. So it was it's got to be a big moment when you pick up that very first win.
Tennessee might be sad to see February go. Last year, Tennessee 9-0 in February. This year, 9-0 in February. The combined runs against opponents in those 18 February wins, 160-21. Not bad.
Not bad.
And 10 different Vols have hit a home run. Lady Vols in the Buccaneer Classic, so they're going to be playing February 29th through March the 2nd. They got a couple of games on Saturday at 3 and 5 o'clock, Sunday at 2:30 and 4:30, and then Monday at noon. The other SEC basketball games last night, South Carolina defeating Georgia in overtime, 94-90. Really good basketball game. Kind of screwed up my mojo because I had the Tennessee game taped. And, I missed the first 10 or so minutes of it. Listen to it with Bob Kessling and Bill Justice on the call. Anthony Edwards had 36 points. Here's the deal. South Carolina had 6 players in double digits. And that assist-turnover ratio, South Carolina 22 assists to 10 turnovers, Georgia 13 to 14 turnovers. Missouri beating Vanderbilt, who cares? Trevor Lawrence took his first college loss against LSU, and he said all that's doing is motivating him to work harder in this offseason. James Franklin, Penn State coach, 6-year deal worth a total of $38 million if he hits all his incentives. The final year of that deal will be about $7 million. Ryan Day at Ohio State going from $4.5 million to $6 million. They are paying Big Ten. They're paying SEC money in the Big Ten now. So those are pretty healthy contracts. Washington Redskins say they're not ruling anything out, so they're going to visit with quarterbacks Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. Mel Kiper's got 3 quarterbacks going among his top 5 picks. He's got Burrow 1, 2 at 3, Justin Herbert 5. If that happens, it'll be only the 3rd time since 1967 that 3 of the top 5 picks will be quarterbacks. Dan Orlovsky with ESPN, a former NFL quarterback. He thinks Herbert's going to be feast or famine, and he said Herbert hurt his stock by staying at Oregon another year. A couple of other notes. So number 9 Maryland defeated Minnesota 74-73 in Big Ten basketball as Daryl Morcel hit a three with 1.9 seconds left. What makes that interesting? Maryland was down by 17 points and came back to win that game. It was 47-30 at half. That is now Maryland's third Big Ten win this season when they trail by at least 15 points. The CBA, the player reps, voted 17-14 to send it to the players, one abstain. Aaron Rodgers said no. One reason he said no was he didn't think there's enough details in this contract. So we will see what transpires with that. We've got another bowl game this year, the L.A. Bowl. It'll be in the new stadium in Los Angeles. The Mountain West number 1 team will take on the Pac-12 number 5. Also, a former Penn basketball coach gets a 15-year show cause. Jerome Allen, now an assistant with the Boston Celtics, was alleged to have accepted $250,000 in bribe money from the prospect of a dad to give his son a scholarship.
Goodness.
Here was a really neat story. I apologize because I apparently missed this when Tobias Harris was at Tennessee, and he played, what, 10 years ago maybe? Been a while, however long it's been. Anyway, his grandfather, John Mulzack, was a part of the Tuskegee Airmen. He flew in World War II. Tobias Harris was interviewed on ESPN. It's really neat. If you get a chance to see it, I think folks will enjoy that. So Tobias said when he was young that he knew that his grandfather was a pilot. He had seen him with an airplane and some of the people that he flew with. He said he didn't really get the significance of it until he arrived in college and heard about the Tuskegee Airmen. His grandfather, John Mulzack, 8 kids, 22 grandkids, so they showed a picture with all of them in there. Tobias said that when his grandfather talked about it, he said he was emotional, he was energetic. He was part, was Mulzack, of the group of Tuskegee Airmen that received the Congressional Gold Medal in 2007 from President Bush. And Bush said that they fought two wars. They fought a war in Europe, and they fought a war from the hearts and minds of U.S. citizens who did not think they were capable of doing what they did. They were honored 66 years later. 8 years later, Tobias Harris's grandfather passed away at 91 years old, 2015. The grandfather went on to become, after the war, a New York firefighter, and he also served in the reserve for the Korean and Vietnam Wars. So, really neat story, John.
Very neat story. And one of the things that there are so many interesting bits of history that are within, I mean, almost spitting distance of several spots around the Southeastern Conference. Actually took on a baseball trip, not the most recent one, but the one before that, went to the airfield of the Tuskegee Airmen when Tennessee was playing at Auburn a few years ago, and it was just a wonderful experience.
How far is that from Auburn?
It's not far at all. You just you get on the interstate, you head west, and you're there in less than an hour.
Yeah. A couple of NBA notes. So the Rockets playing small ball beat Memphis 140-112. They've got 143 threes since February 5 when they started going to the small ball. That's second in the NBA. As Russell Westbrook with 33 points, James Harden with 30, combined to win it. Their floor spacing, their ability to drive to the basket, and the confidence these guys have, they've been a tough out for these opponents right now. That's the seventh time that Westbrook and Harden have had a 30-point game. Houston has won 6 of those, and LeBron James and Anthony Davis have combined for 30 in the same game 4 times. Memphis, by the way, has lost 4 in a row. Dallas defeating the Spurs 109-103. Luka Doncic, another triple-double, 26 points, 14 assists, 10 rebounds. He has the record now for the most triple-doubles by an NBA player before reaching the age of 21. His next game, he will be 21. So he has done 21 triple-doubles before reaching the age of 21. Magic Johnson had 7. LeBron had 5. They are a distant second and third to Doncic's 21. And Doncic has already tied Dallas's record, career record, franchise record, for most triple-doubles. Jason Kidd had 21 in his career. So he's off to a pretty good start there. Porzingis, by the way, 28 points, 12 rebounds. In Philadelphia, Joel Embiid out with a shoulder injury. Ben Simmons is out. Philadelphia is 27-2 at home. That's pretty good, right?
Mm-hmm.
9-21 on the road.
Yeah, and they got whipped last night in Cleveland.
They did, yep.
Cavs taught them a lesson.
They sure did. And and they knocked Embiid's shoulder out of socket. That was a pretty good move. Boston defeating Utah. So Jason Tatum with 30 points. I thought this note was interesting. That's the sixth time in his last nine games he's had 30 points. He had 30 points in his six times in his previous 232 games. So at least 30 points in six of the last nine, 30 points in six of his previous 232 games. Jay Williams of ESPN said that if he had a choice, he would take, of those players under 21, he would take Tatum number one, Doncic number two, Zion number three. A couple other quick notes. Japan has banned fans from preseason baseball games due to the coronavirus. They've got 72 preseason games left. They open the season March the 20th. And seven Astros have now been hit by a pitch in the spring so far. I don't know what the over-under is, but there'll be a whole lot more than seven hit before they start the season.
Take the over. Take the over for sure. And to amend my statement, it's actually less than 20 miles from Auburn to Tuskegee and their airfield, which is a national historic site.
Yeah.
We'll get a break. We've got a lot coming your way. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900. That's how you join us on 99.1, The Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. Last night, another tough road trip for the University of Tennessee. Here is what Tennessee coach Rick Barnes had to say when he spoke with Bob Kessling after the Razorbacks win.
Coach, your thoughts on Arkansas's comeback in the second half?
Well, you know what, Bob? I'm proud of what our guys did. And, you know, we, again, started out turning the ball over way too much in the first half, dug ourselves a hole. And even with that said, we told the guys at that time we're good because, you know, we had had chances to get it back. And then when we got to, I think we got it down to one or two. Then they hit a couple bombs, you know, and then during that stretch we missed some free throw. I think we missed a free throw. I think we missed some layups. But we didn't guard them in the second half. But the other thing that we did do in the second half, we took care of the ball better, and we scored 42 points. Mm-hmm. But it goes back. We were fighting uphill, and I'm just really disappointed tonight in the second half with the way we defended, and it's just really disappointing.
They basically did a lot of ISO plays in the second half to get the ball to Jones.
They did that. They did. That's how they played. He tried to do the same thing in Knoxville. They got it again, obviously, you know, having Joe out there, it opens up a different gap. But, you know, they did what we thought they would do. We felt we'd guard their actions, which we did. We knew it forced them into some ISOs, but they made shots.
And, yeah, I was going to say, some of those bombs that Jones had, how do you defend those?
Well, again, and then those you can't, because I thought we were out there where we needed to be. But it's the ones going to the rim where our defense wasn't good. We got on the side of him. We put him on the free throw line. That's where he got a lot of points, too. And those are plays that you can't give him both of them.
Yeah, Isaiah Joe also stepped up and made a lot of free throws. So they were driving to the basket.
He did, you know. And again, that's how they play. We knew that, getting to the free throw line. And, again, our defense just wasn't very good.
Talk about offensively in the first half. Why the slow start? I know you were troubled by that.
I am troubled by it because it's the same old record. We keep talking about it. And again, it's just guys that aren't doing what they need to do, just not executing, just understanding at the start of the game, especially on the second go-round, they're going to have, like they were working hard to keep Santi to his right, which we that's what they're going to do. We knew they're going to get him into ball screens. But it's the turnovers. You know, they knocked the ball loose in there a couple times, and you know, I think we were 11-1 to start or something like that.
Yeah,
but they just, just knocking the ball loose, and that's where we knew that when the ball got in there. We talked about it yesterday that hey, they're gonna be so concerned about us inside, which they should be. At the start of the game, we weren't as sharp as we needed to be.
There's a mental aspect you have to take on the road sometimes. Was your team tough enough mentally tonight?
I think when you start the game like that, I don't think so. Did we show toughness coming back? We did. And we put ourselves in a position that we were right there, but then we got it to two, and they went on an 8-0 run where they hit two threes. We didn't do what we needed to do on the offensive end, and we actually missed some free throws right through there, if I'm thinking clearly right now. But and then from there, again, we're fighting back uphill again. You just can't keep fighting uphill all night long, and we had to do it in the first half, got it down, I think, to 6 or 8 at 1, and they went back on a run, and we just – when we got it to two, we were there. And then, again, you got to give them credit. He had two big bombs out there.
Shots. You went inside a lot in the second half to focus in to start things.
Well, again, that's how we were supposed to start the game. But when we did in the first half, you know, John, we didn't think he was fighting as hard as he could. He took a couple tough shots, and he got the ball knocked out of his hands twice.
Now you kind of backed up against the wall down the stretch here. You got three big games, and you really need to win them.
Bob, we've been up against the wall all year, man. You know, and again, and the bottom line is we got to break through with this group some way, somehow. But we got to have a better overall effort on the defensive end than we did here tonight.
Back at home on Saturday against Florida. We'll see you then.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Comments from Rick Barnes.
I did not think Tennessee's defense was very good. I thought that Arkansas had its way. Driving to the basket, Tennessee didn't have an answer for Jones taking to the basket or hitting threes. I thought he worked over Pons on a few of those possessions, and then Joe hit some threes. He's really good. He makes a big difference with that team. I thought before the year, Joe was their best player, and then Jones has emerged with 7 30-point games, which is highly unusual for a player in this league to do that, but he's got seven of them so far this year. And they've got other good pieces. The transfer Witt that's come in and done a nice job, and I thought he did a good job defensively on Vescovi. When healthy, that's that Arkansas team, I mentioned it earlier, I think they look like an NCAA tournament team. I know they lost all five games without Joe, but when they're healthy and playing like that, now they're a little bit typical of an Arkansas team, a lot better at home than on the road, but I think that's a dangerous basketball team, and I don't think if they get in the NCAA tournament, there are a whole lot of teams that want to face them when healthy.
Yeah, I do think they can definitely cause some big-time headaches. The question is whether or not it's too little too late, because they did hit a rough stretch. They weren't able to take their pre-conference success and have it translate into conference play, and then as you mentioned with Joe, they just weren't the same team, but they are playing awfully well right now.
I do wonder how much the NCAA selection committee takes into account that they were without Joe for five games. They've taken into account late in the year where a play gets hurt, and then they would penalize the team in the seeding. So now do you flip that and say, okay, this guy was out, but now when he's on the team, they're really good. It'll be interesting to see. By the way, I heard the announcers last night say that they'd be shocked if the SEC doesn't get five and they'll probably get six. I'm not in that camp. I'm not in the camp that says Arkansas is going to get there yet. They still have a lot more work to do to get in there. Right now, I think it's four. And if there's a fifth right now, it looks to me like it's going to be Arkansas.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with more as you listen to Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal. Sports Talk continues with Jimmy Hyams of John Wilkerson, 656-9900, 656-9900. Star 990 is free for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. The toll-free number, 1-866-656-9900.
We'd like to hear from Jill Pruden now. Jill Pruden is the head coach of the – was the head coach of the Oak Ridge girls team. She is the winner of the Morgan Wooten Award. And so we had a chance to track her down. She's been out of coaching for about 10 years, and she was basically surprised to get that phone call. In fact, when we talked to her, she said, I didn't recognize that number. I thought it might be spam. But she went in and took the call, and she is grateful that she did because this is a very significant award, and they give one girls basketball coach, one boys basketball coach this award every year. Morgan Wooten's one of the greatest high school coaches ever. Coached for 46 years at DeMatha High School in Washington, D.C., did a terrific job. And so you have got to be a special coach to win one of these awards. And they have selected Jill Pruden, who's in the Knoxville Hall of Fame. She's in the TSSAA Hall of Fame. And now she's being honored with the Morgan Wooten Award. Here is our interview earlier with Jill Pruden. Jill, you have received the prestigious Morgan Wooten Award. That's going to be presented later. It comes from the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. What's your reaction to such a prestigious award?
Wow. Initially shocked, very, very honored and very humbled by it. I'll be honest, when the call came in, you know, I've been out of coaching for 10 years, so I looked at the phone number. It wasn't anybody I recognized. I thought maybe it was spam. And when I did answer the phone, the gentleman said, Coach Pruden. Well, when I hear that, I think, gosh, does somebody want me to speak? Really? I haven't coached in 10 years. And then when he identified himself and what he was calling about, it was literally just shocking.
Are you familiar with Morgan Wooten?
I do know who he is. I've never met him, and obviously I know he's passed recently, but just when you read his bio, it's just phenomenal of what he was able to accomplish as a coach and a person.
Yeah, 46 years. He's one of four high school coaches in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Now, you're going to be honored around the McDonald's All-America game. That's going to be around April. Jill, your record is fantastic, but I wonder, what got you into coaching in the first place?
Ah, great question. You know, I have always had a love for the game. Only played 1 year in high school ball because Michigan had just started it my senior year in high school. Had a chance to play at Michigan State, and I just loved it and thought, wow, how can I continue to be involved in the game? And I had moved south, and it was really just a perfect timing situation. Oak Ridge was looking for someone with five-on-five background as Tennessee was changing from half-court games to full court. I didn't know the half-court game, had never seen it. So, you know, I was very obviously invested and interested in the full-court game. So, really, it was just a great timing opportunity for me.
So, tell me about your first season. Did you love it? Did you struggle? Did you think, what in the world am I doing? What was that reaction after the first year?
All of the above. I got hired, I believe it was early June, and the next week I met my team on a bus going to Cookeville for camp games. And so I didn't know a name. I didn't have an offense, a defense. They had never played full court. So trust me, it was a learning experience. The first year we struggled. And I'll be honest, I would take a lot of that on myself. I think I realized well into that first season as we struggled that I thought perhaps I was probably more ambitious in terms of where I thought they might be. They were eager to learn and wanted to try, but it was so new to them, the concept, a lot of the full court type of thing. So I realized I had to slow down and back up a little bit and do just a better job at teaching the build-up skills for the game.
Did you envision then that you would be the coach at Oak Ridge for 31 years?
You know, I've always told myself I'm not a big change artist. I loved the high school game, the level. Oak Ridge is a great town, a great school, a great community. We had great support. And as I watched a lot of my friends go into college coaching, I thought, you know, I'd rather be coaching a game in a gym than sitting there recruiting players in a gym. So I just never had that deep down desire to go to the next level because I just really liked what I was doing.
Yeah, that's interesting, not the desire to go to that next level. Why did you feel like you preferred having players being recruited rather than recruiting them?
You know, I just didn't see, for me personally, the joy in recruiting. I would watch, like I said, some of my colleagues sit there and communicate with 16, 17, 18-year-old young ladies, and they spent their whole time. That was their life, just talking to young people. And I love developing young people. So there's a lot about the college game I would have liked. I would have liked the practices, the strategy, the game situations. But I really think that one element, you know, as a young coach, you would have been on the road. Just that would have been your life going from gym at that point. At that time, it was kind of like AAU tournaments, just one tournament after the other. And that just didn't really interest me. I just really loved the level I was at. We were very competitive within our area, obviously within the state. So that was a good challenge for me.
We're visiting with Jill Pruden. She's been selected as a Morgan Wooten Award winner. I wonder if during your time at Oak Ridge, if you changed a lot as a coach, whether that was gaining more patience, whether it was a system, a style that you played. Did you change much during your time there?
Yeah, that's a great question. You could probably ask some of my former players and get a better answer. I've always been very competitive. I've always been really driven. My kids might say I was kind of hard on them. I don't know if I mellowed as I got older, but I tried to do a better job of meeting players where they were at and finding different ways to motivate them. I'm very intrinsically motivated, and I think I learned the longer I coached that there are fewer and fewer people that are intrinsically motivated. So I had to find different ways to reach kids. So maybe I changed that way. So I think I became a better patient coach. Perhaps more flexible. I think early on, I pretty much had a plan, and I really wanted to stick with that plan. And as the season would develop, I realized I had to do a lot more altering and making adjustments, and I think I got better at that. I hope I did as I got into my career.
Did Oak Ridge have much tradition as far as success before you arrived?
Yes, even in the half-court game, it's always been a school with really good athletes, good programs. So, yes, there were a number of good players, actually, that came through Oak Ridge that went on and played before I got there. So I wasn't starting from ground zero in terms of a talent pool. I was really just starting more ground zero from just their knowledge and their ability to play a five-on-five game.
You won three state championships at Oak Ridge. The first was in 1988. You had been at Oak Ridge roughly 18 years when that occurred. How gratifying was it?
Huh. Wow, it was, you know, literally a dream come true. You know, back in that day, our area was always matched with the mid-state area. So for years, we played the Shelbyvilles, the Gallatin, and it just so happened, though I thought we had good teams, that mid-state section was so dominant during those years. So to finally break through, I think on all three state championships, we actually beat Shelbyville, which is kind of sweet since they are such a tremendous tradition. But to finally break through was just so gratifying, and I was just so happy for the kids because we've had so many good teams, and to finally break through and win one, that was really a great moment for not only me and the players, but for our town.
Much of your career mirrored Pat Summitt at the University of Tennessee, and I wonder, were you friends with her? Did you talk basketball strategy with her much at all?
Yes and no. We were friends, and obviously I had a lot of respect and a lot of admiration. I had worked a lot of Pat's camps at one time, so I kind of got to know her that way. And obviously the way she reached out to local coaches, you know, we all got to know her. But I did have a chance to talk to her some. You know, at the level she was at, I'm not going to spend a lot of time basically taking up her time, but we did have opportunities. You know, she came and obviously recruited Nikki Caldwell, so we fostered an even better relationship that. But, you know, how lucky and fortunate was I to have, to, you know, to be in her backyard, to have that program. If you can't motivate kids with the University of Tennessee right down the road, you know, you're not doing a very good job as a coach.
In 1998, you were the head coach of the World Youth Games in Moscow. What did that mean to you?
Wow. To represent your country is just, it's an awesome experience. And the way they did things at USA Basketball, I can't say enough good things about them. It's everything I believe in. There's a right way and a wrong way to do things and how you represent yourself and how you work. It was such a first-class organization. I was very proud to be a part of it. And then the level of athletes I got to work with, the coaching staff, the whole package is so exciting. If anybody ever has a chance to work USA Basketball, it is just a really exceptional experience. To actually play in those games, it was so different, you know, to play basically you play by Olympic rules, just something simple like you can't call a timeout when you want one. You have to put it to the table. You've got to wait for a certain break in the game. So the whole strategy behind it was very different. So that was a real learning experience for me.
You won 908 games against 161 losses, an incredible record. You also had more than 50 players get scholarships. What number was more important to you, 908 wins or having at least 50 players get a scholarship?
Definitely the 50 players, but I tell you, there's a reason there's 908 wins, and it is those 50 players and a lot more than that. You know, we just had a great wealth of talent kids come through our programs. You know, a lot of those kids played at AU together. We had a lot of kids come into our area because our area was a good program. So I'd be the first to tell you, you know, when you do something right and do it well, it draws people into your community. Oak Ridge Schools is a very good sell for parents wanting to get in a good educational system. So I just had so many good players come through those years. But for them to go on, a lot of them went on into coaching, but different things, but to get a free education, I think that's probably what I'm most proud that they had an opportunity to continue on.
Jennifer Azey, one of the best players you ever coached, she went to Stanford. She won an Olympic gold medal in 1996. How much pride did you take in that?
Wow, so much pride. You know, she was the kind of player, she was a really good high school player, but I always felt like her best days were down the road because she's such a good worker. She's so competitive. I knew she would continue to grow and get better. And, you know, there was always that discussion that she didn't go to UT and decided to go to Stanford and then wins an NCAA title with them and then goes on as an Olympian. And she just had all those qualities, you know, a great leader, great work ethic, all those things that make you a really good player. So couldn't have been more proud to have her go on to be Olympian.
You stopped after 31 years. Some coaches, it's after 20, 25, 30, 35. It was 31 with you. Why did you decide at that point you were ready to step down from coaching?
Yeah, that's a great question. I just, going into that year, As you know, coaching just takes a lot of time. It's a very invested profession in terms of time, commitment, all those types of things, which a lot are. And I think I was just really ready for a change. We went to state that year. We had a good year. You know, if you're going to get out, at least for me, I want to get out while I'm on top. And I was just ready to have my day look a little bit different. You know, I went on and taught 8 years after that. But I just really wanted just to do something different. Soon after that, my parents came to live with me. So there was a lot of different things within my personal life changed. And that obviously I felt like I was still continuing coaching, just had a different area to coach within.
One other question. What did you enjoy most about coaching?
Well, you know, I'm sure a lot of people say the same thing, but it has to be the relationships you have with people. When I look at that Nikki Caldwell team, I just remember that group of young ladies. You know, some kids, you get on a bus and go to a away game, they all sit in the back. They can't wait to get away from that coach. That was a group of kids. We'd sit up front. They'd sing oldies. They were just like old souls. That team was so tight. After they graduated, they all stayed in touch. We all got together. So I think it's those relationships that you form with some players, with the coaching staff. You know, I had some just great assistant coaches in Lynn and Kim Tisdale and David Scott. And I think it's those relationships that really stay with you. The wins are fun. The games are competitive and exciting, but you really think about the people that you did that with, and that's really, for me, what sticks with me.
Jill, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations again on being the Morgan Wooten Award winner.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
That's Jill Pruden, the former head coach at Oak Ridge with the women's team. What a great record. We mentioned the three state championships. She had five runner-up finishes, and she is going to be honored during the Women's McDonald's All-America High School game, which will be early in April.
We'll get a break and be back with a final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Name a more iconic duo than the Budweiser Studios and Cumulus Broadcasting.
It's all right.
I'll wait. This is Sports Radio, WNML.
Final segment of this first hour of Sports Talk with Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. To join us, 656-9900, 656-9900.
Ohio State defensive end Chase Young said he is the best player in the draft. Do you think the percentage of him succeeding are better than Joe Burrow or Tua or Herbert or anybody else in the draft?
I think he has the chance to be. I think he's a true game changer that's available in this year's draft. And I think he's in a better position to perhaps impact the game immediately, as opposed to somebody who you have to wonder if they're ready. They got the offense down the way you want it to be run. How are things going with your offensive line, personnel, chemistry, all that fun stuff. So, yeah, I do think that he would be perhaps the chance of the names that you've heard the most to make the biggest splash right off the bat.
Some think he's better than Nick Bosa, who had a terrific rookie year in the NFL. I think that the person who will have the greatest impact on his team eventually or over a period of time is Joe Burrow. I think he's can't miss, which you can't always say about quarterbacks. I understand that, but I think he's going to really be good. But the guy that's going to make the greater impact immediately, I think, is Chase Young. Because I think, and the percentages of a great defensive end making it, I bet you, are higher than a quarterback. There have been plenty of first-round quarterbacks that were busts. Number one picks, Jamarcus Russell, who were busts. Kelly Smith was like the number two or three pick, a bust. So there are a lot of them at quarterback because much more is demanded of a quarterback. Learning the offense, learning the defense, making that quick decision. So there's so many more elements involved with playing quarterback that could lead you to not being a success in the NFL. Therefore, I think Chase Young, the percentages of him are higher that he is going to make it and have an impact right away. But over time, I think it's going to be Burrow. I don't believe this one-hit wonder with him, which some are arguing about. I thought the last part of his first year at LSU, I thought he was really good, really good. And that's when they started to open things up. Before that, they were running that old Les Miles, two wide outs and a tight end, and run up the middle 48 times a game. And then when they started changing that and opening things up the latter part of the year, he impressed. And then, of course, his senior year was phenomenal. So we'll see. But I think Burrow and Chase Young are both can't miss.
That's Jimmy Hyams. I'm John Wilkerson. We'll get a break and be back with hour number two of Sports Talk as you listen to 99.1 The Sports Animal.